Good morning, happy Thursday, and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for being at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone lines and the email device and all the multiple ways we have of communicating with each other nowadays. Phone number 414-1234, local light to Tallahassee. It's 800-926-8809. If it's long distance, perspectives@wfsu.org is the email address, and our Twitter connection is at WFSU Perspective. May is always a big month, not just because the weather's getting very nice and there are lots of fun things to do, trips to the beach and all that, but for those of us with a kind of historic bent, it's a fascinating time in and around Florida's capital city because of all the significance of the occasion that is coming up a little bit later this month as we mark the Emancipation Proclamation reading, the first reading in the Florida area, which took place in Tallahassee in May of 1865, 150 years ago this month that took place. And it was not just historic because it meant that the slaves that had heretofore been enslaved were now free, but it actually set a course in the relationships between people that continues right up to this day. And we thought we'd talk about it a bit here on Perspectives. We are really happy to have some great folks to get that conversation cooking, not the least of whom an old friend, Althamese Barnes, who is Executive Director Emeritus of the John G. Riley House Museum and Museum of African American History and Culture. Ms. Althamese, it is always great to see you.
It's always great to be here, Tom.
And you brought a friend, too, yes. Marion McGee, 2015 Conference Chair of the Florida African American Heritage Preservation Network. And Missy, as you'd like to be called, it is great to have you here, too.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here.
And joining us also is Sarah Shaw, who is museum educator at for the Florida Museum of History, specifically at the Knott House, where this all goes down a little bit later on. So, Sarah, coming up what day so we can get it on our calendar and get it all ready to go down and celebrate?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. And the Emancipation celebration that we celebrate annually is on May 20th, every single year, no matter what day it is.
And this has been going on now for how many years has the reenactment of the Emancipation Proclamation reading at the Knott House been going on?
Well, since 2001, the Museum of Florida History with the John G. Riley Museum has presented the event on May 20th, and it commemorates the freeing of the enslaved persons in North Florida.
Now, the Emancipation Proclamation itself, though, had been authored by President Abraham Lincoln two years before, Althamese. Why did it take so long to get down here? I mean, we know that things were a little bit slower back in the day. You couldn't just text message somebody, but why 2 years?
Well, that was a part of the learning process that the Riley and Knott House Florida Museum of History been trying to get forward. First of all, word traveled differently back then. We didn't have the Facebook, Twitter, and what have you. But moreover, the reading that took place in Tallahassee on May 20th, 1865, was the enforcement reading. As we are saying, the proclamation was signed January 1st, 1863, but there were seven states that were still in rebellion and holding slaves. So the president then ordered the different generals to go into different parts of those states to read the Emancipation. So for Florida, the slaves here were not really free until May 1865, 2 years later. And so that's why even prior to the reenactment that we do at the Knott House, families out in the rural areas on plantations have been doing May 20th celebrations in their communities since that reading on 1865. In fact, my family came from one of those rural areas, and we would always go out to Testarina Church out Miccosukee Road, where the Miccosukee Greenway is now, and we would actually have a day out of school on May 20th, because then the schools were segregated. So black schools were, that was a holiday. And families would load up their children, take picnic foods out and all, and the drums would be there to beat. So since 1865, there have been commemorations among blacks in the rural areas and other areas across town.
But it seems amazing that it took until into the 2000s, though, for it to become a commemoration that the entire community could gather around.
Right. And that was, here again, the lack of knowledge of what happened. So we had our friend Claude Kennison, who does a lot of research, to actually pull the documents to show where the Democrat, there were write-ups about the commemoration. And that caught the interest with us working with Department of State and researchers there. And so we went over and met with, back then it was Joan Mady, who was the director of the Knott House. And so, you know, we need to celebrate this, commemorate that event. And we always do it on Emancipation Day, May 20th. I know once it, early on, it fell on the weekend. And so some were saying, well, you know, that's the weekend. Maybe we should do it Wednesday or two. I said, no. May 20th, whenever it happens.
It's like Christmas, you know. You celebrate it when it hits. Come on.
Right.
Now, in addition to, and we'll talk some more about the actual reading of the Emancipation Proclamation and the gentleman who for so many years has been the face of General McCook, which is, I think, just if you have not seen this, you have got to. This is something that you will only find in Tallahassee because that's exactly where it happened. But Ms. McKee, there's some other things going on in conjunction with this too, right?
Yes, we have a full slate of events coming up. We start this Saturday with our Walk Through Living History. And that is really a precursor to setting the tone and the context for taking people back through the historic context of this time and why 1865 was so meaningful to the realization of freedoms for so many of America's citizens at that time. And then we follow up next Saturday on May 16th with Tour Guide Day, and that is a local tourism piece that we encourage Tallahassee residents to come. They get free admission to the Riley Museum from 10 a.m. until 2 o'clock p.m. all day Saturday, May 16th. And we'll have music and food and lots of good things to share, as well as a debut of our newest exhibit, which is the African-American Espionage in the Civil War. And when you come, you will see just a collection of really meaningful memorabilia and artifacts and an illustration of what it meant to secure or self-emancipate for the sake of seeking freedom and the number of African Americans that did so during the Civil War era.
Espionage, that sounds like an almost untold story buried there.
Exactly. It is the James Bond of the 19th century type, or I guess in today's term, the scandal, you know, the story behind the story, the things that happened where people led somewhat of a double life in order to secure freedom for themselves, for their families, and really for an entire generation. And without African Americans in espionage, there likely would not have been the same result or win for the Union soldiers for the Civil War, that there could have been a different outcome. So it tells that side of the story. Those who worked on both sides to make sure that the outcome was what they desired it to be.
Well, actually, it's only been within the past few years, I believe, that we actually had an acknowledgement of the contribution of African American troops to the entire the Battle of Natural Bridge, for crying out loud. They were an integral part of that whole thing. And suddenly now we're saying, hey, and we're including them.
Exactly.
Why did it take so long? What happened?
I think for the sake of what the Riley Museum has been to Tallahassee is bringing back the living history and making history a part of our relevant day-to-day experience. And through the efforts, and I'll say the passion of Mrs. Barnes. She helped to start a United States Colored Troop reenactment unit. It's led by Sergeant Major Jarvis Rozier. And through that development of that group back in 2010, that has helped for people to actually understand that although these reenactments have been going on for years, for decades, that starting in 2010, that was the first time an accurate representation of battles like the Battle of Natural Bridge, Battle of Mariana, and many other Civil War battles that took place throughout Florida that involved African-American soldiers, African-American casualties, and as well as the families, the women, the children who supported the efforts of the soldiers. And so I think a part of bringing history back to life and a part of this build-up to the May 20th emancipation event is to help people rediscover and see history as it really was.
Sure. And Sarah Shaw, that has been gone into the commemoration at the Knott House as well. That is now a more historically accurate representation maybe today than what it was a few years ago.
Yes. The Jarvis and his the other troops have been participating in the commemoration ever since 2010, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I believe they'll be making yet another appearance, and you'll be able to see them at this year's reading, too.
One thing that comes out of that, should be interjected here, is that Riley has always been that organization that reached out, did a lot of outreach to bring all groups to the table. And because of that, when the Leon Rifle Group was seeking that one organization that they could come to say, you know, we really want to put the true face on this battle, we would like the United States Colored Troops there. And that started the whole thing. But the thought I'm trying to get out, our perspective, is that Riley has positioned itself since inception to be that open door to education, as opposed to, well, in some instances, museums are more like cabinets of curiosity. You go, you see, you leave. But we have always had that teaching component. And so it's very fortunate that we were happy that the Leon Rifles came. Jarvis was able to put it together. And both groups now participate in that reenactment.
Actual history that you can see reenacted coming up on the 20th of this month at the Knott House, and the other events that are coming up too. Talk about them more right here on Perspectives. All kinds of happenings here in Tallahassee, which was a hotbed of historic activity 150 years ago for the reading of the Emancipation Proclamation, the first reading of it in Florida from the steps of the Knott House in downtown Tallahassee. And actually, May 18th through 20th, there's a statewide museums conference that is going on. There is something going on this Saturday, the Living History Tableau, the Tour Guide Day coming up on the 16th, and much, much more, all during May as part of Emancipation Month here in Florida's capital city. Altamis Barnes, Missy McGee, and Sarah Shaw here with us on Perspectives. And we're also inviting your participation via phone at 414-1234, 800-926-8809, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. Altamis, you're talking here about the other things that are going on in conjunction with this, and again, trying to use this as an education tool. You don't know where you're going unless you know where you've been, and that has been your entire bailiwick from the time that you've been involved with trying to get a more accurate historical representation of all this, right?
Yes, that is true. And one other thing that we are bringing back, since the commemoration started back in 1865, one of the key methods for celebrating was the drumbeat. We always called it the May 20th drumbeat. And if a person who grew up with that can be amidst many different cadences played by a drum, but if that cadence switches to the 20th of May drumbeat, we know what it is because that's what we grew up with. So for this year's commemoration, we have been able to secure 7 senior gentlemen between the ages of 62 to 86. They got with the Ricketts High School drumline and rehearsed a couple of weeks ago. And they will be there on May 20th to beat that beat. It does 2 things. These gentlemen are passing on that tradition to the next generation. And we have the Folklife unit from Department of State who came to the rehearsal, taped it, did a visual of it. And so that also will be made known to the public so that that tradition won't be lost once these gentlemen have moved on to other things or other places. So we're very excited about that.
Well, was this in the first time that this emancipation beat was sounded, was it the equivalent of an 1865 text message, I mean, to one and all, that the time has come?
The time has come. And every year, year after year, when you go, there were these drummers there. And people would move and dance to the drums in celebration.
And that's the way that it was communicated, particularly to the rural society that we had. I mean, Tallahassee was only a few thousand people in 1865. It was not the grand metropolis that we see today.
Right. Right.
You get much beyond the Knot House and the Smoky Hollow area down there along Franklin Boulevard. There wasn't much else in town, right?
That's correct. And some of the areas, like out off of Bannerman Road, they still have a celebration out there on May 20th. And some of these gentlemen who would be with us beat the drums out there on December 26th. Because here again, though this was read in May, the word still traveled to other pockets of Linn County at different times because you didn't have the modern-day communication. So wherever you heard the word, too, you might have a different date that people were celebrating. There's also a celebration in the community out on Centerville Road on Hillsgate Court because they also had a big celebration out there, and it continues to this day as well.
And this is something that the community at large, again, was not aware of for years and years, that this was all going on.
True.
Now we know. We have an email from Ron, and Ms. McGee, if you could repeat the date and times for the espionage event. That kind of tripped his trigger, and he's going, ooh.
Oh, wonderful. Well, starting on May 16th, we have the tour guide day, and it starts at 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, May 16th, and ends at 2 o'clock p.m., which is the regular hours for the Riley Museum tours. And that day in particular will be free to the public, so we invite everyone out. And it will be a lot for families and for individuals that want to discover some of the unknown histories of the area to come and enjoy. And that serves as the lead-in to our Florida African American Historic Preservation Network conference. And that conference kicks off with arrival of our Connecting the Dots bus tour that will be coming from St. Petersburg on Sunday, May 17th. So we'll have tourists coming in, not only from St. Pete on the Connecting the Dots tour, but over 40 museums, African-American historic sites and museums throughout the state that will arrive in Tallahassee that Sunday. And we will all join together on Monday for our pre-conference event that features a free community placemaking forum with keynote speaker Donovan Rickema. And he is well-renowned author of The Economics of Place, and he is highly respected in his field for placemaking and the economic impact of placemaking on many communities with an emphasis on preservation of historic sites. So that is a forum that we hope all of Tallahassee will come out and embrace. Again, it's free. It'll be held at the Turnbull Center from 10 a.m. until 12 noon on Monday, May 18th. And the talk with Donovan Rickema will be followed by a Landmarks and Legacy tour, which is something that really has been coined and crafted by Mrs. Barnes over the years to make sure that we don't forget the rich treasures throughout Tallahassee. And so that tour will encompass a lot of the local landmarks and legacies that have great significance to not only African Americans, but to all of Tallahassee, and appreciating what makes our city so great. Then we go on Tuesday with our full conference events, and that's on Tuesday, May 19th. We start at 7:30 that morning with a networking breakfast that's being sponsored by the Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau. And you think, well, why is Miami coming all the way to Tallahassee? Well, they recognize that this one Florida's capital city, that the benefit of coming together in Tallahassee is that we can join together and really highlight a lot of the historic treasures throughout the state. And that's something that we often talk about, Florida having ownership of the true American history, and having places throughout our state that often don't get highlighted, like St. Augustine, like Fort Mose, like the Meridian Marker, like the historic Smoky Hollow community. And so they are coming and sponsoring a networking breakfast for all tourism and preservation professionals to come together and talk about how we market the heritage tourism of the Tallahassee area and what cultural and heritage tourism really means to increasing an appreciation for the great asset that makes Florida so rich in history. We follow that with a full day of workshops from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. And information on those workshops and signing up for any of those can be found on the Riley Museum website, which is www.rileymuseum.org. And that day of workshops will be highlighted by a keynote from a culinary historian, Dr. Jessica Harris. And she's going to share with us over a wonderful Southern lunch, a very traditional Southern lunch, about the history of foodways and the preservation of customs and traditions that follow the ways in which we treat food from Africa to the Americas. So it's another way of taking the discussion of preservation beyond the built environment to things like preserving the Jubilee celebration, preserving the culinary celebrations and their significance to our cultural identities. And it also will highlight some of the things that we do customarily that we may not necessarily realize why we do picnics for these types of events versus why we do larger gatherings. So that's a part of the buildup to the May 20th commemoration of emancipation and freedom for African Americans.
That is a packed schedule for one conference.
And I didn't mention that we culminate actually after the event at the Knott House. We start that morning on Wednesday the 20th with a commemorative ceremony at the Old City Cemetery. And that's, going back to bringing the history back to life, there are African-American colored troops, those that were known as colored troops at that time, the USCT soldiers buried in the Old City Cemetery. And so we go to commemorate and honor their sacrifice, because without their sacrifice, we wouldn't be free today. And so we do have Jarvis and the USCT 2nd Infantry Regiment, U.S. Colored Troop Reenactment Unit there to pay honor. And we also bring kids in from the John Riley Elementary School, from Bethel Christian Academy, and we bring together the community to really commemorate the sacrifice first, and then we move over to the Knott House at 11:30 for the commemorative reenactment of the reading of the Emancipation, and then that night we'll be back at the Turnbull Center for the Emancipation Abolitionist Ball. And that ball will be extra special this year. It starts at 7 p.m. on that Wednesday. And it will, again, commemorate 150 years of freedom and what the Civil War, the end of the Civil War, meant to changing the narrative for African Americans, but also for the history of America as a country, the rebuilding of America as a country.
Emancipation Month is what we're talking about here on Perspectives on WFSU-FM. 414-1234, the local number. It's 800-926-8809. Long distance, and Gina has been patiently hanging on the line. Let's get to her call now. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
Yes, ma'am.
Athanase, I'm sure you're probably familiar with this, but my dad and some of his friends were never big on celebrating 20th of May or Juneteenth because it took 2 years before we found out about emancipation.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he would be so pleased with what you've done, Athanase, with this program and everything that you've managed to include into it.
Well, thank you so much, Gina. Very well do I remember you and your father. And, in fact, we did an oral history with him about his time in World War II. So he was very, very much a supporter of Riley. And, yes, I agree with you. He would certainly embrace what we are doing here.
Oh, thank you, Gina. Really appreciate the nice compliment there. Juneteenth. Now, that is an expression I think a lot of folks are unfamiliar with, Altamise. What's that all about?
Well, Juneteenth, for a lot of people, even in Florida, they have been commemorating that date as Jubilee Day, Freedom Day. But the speaker that's coming this year, I have to give a shout out to Clifton Lewis, who is the director of the L.B. Brown House Museum in Bartow. Because he kept saying, you know, we really need to put strong emphasis on educating in people in Florida that Juneteenth happened on the way through Tallahassee. Because the reading that takes place here by General McCook took place in June, General Granger. But it's just that Texas capitalized more, interpreted more, spread the word more, brought that knowledge forward more so than Florida. So a lot of our people weren't aware that the same thing happened here, but it just happened in May earlier than Juneteenth. So now more and more, even our network sites, we have about 55 museums across the state that we work with, and some of them now have stopped celebrating or commemorating Juneteenth. And they are picking up the historically correct date of May 20th as it relates to Florida and the enforcement reading.
Okay. Well, Texas has always had more marketing money than we had, right?
Yes.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to know, though, Sarah Shaw, if I could, that as we commemorate and have the luxury of having so many of the original structures and accoutrements of the original reading of the proclamation, how the Knot House was able to survive downtown redevelopment and so many other things, because we know what happened to a lot of the older houses. You know, they were turned into commercial properties, whether they're lobbyist offices or whatever. How did the state of Florida manage to hang on to the Knot House?
Well, the Knot House was actually owned by different families throughout the century. And it was actually owned in 1843 by the Hagner family. And when Mr. Hagner died, his wife actually moved away, so it would be rented out, which is why General McCook was able, you know, he made it his headquarters in 1865. Beyond that, it went on to be Dr. Benton's house, and then eventually it went to be owned by the Knotts. In 1928, that's when the Knotts moved in, and they held it in their family until 1985 when it was gifted to the state. So it was actually in Charlie Knott's will that the house be protected, and with the intention that it was made to be a museum like it is nowadays. And so it's been so nowadays it's actually formally managed by the Museum of Florida History. It's administered by the Museum of Florida History, and that's why we aim to make the Emancipation celebration a more formal and recognizable ceremony to, you know, promote, spread the word.
But for the codicil in Charlie's will, it could be a parking lot today.
Yes, because I believe it might have been Nancy Dobson who developed the paperwork that was necessary to make that a historic property. And so once it became a historic property because of the reading of the enforcement document, as well as the fact that it was one of many homes built by George Proctor, who was a black, African-American builder here, whose son went on to become a senator and a representative coming out of slavery. So because of all of those historical facts, historical background, she was able to get it declared a historic property, which sets up a few more barriers there to just coming in and demolishing a structure. Once you have that kind of history highlighted about a facility, it's really a travesty on the part of whomever would do the destruction to take a step that would destroy that history. That makes the presentation by Donovan Rickham a very important, because his entire focus is on revitalizing districts, communities, and the use of historic properties in that process as both a learning but an economic engine. Now, as we have all of the different groups in Linn County and Tallahassee talking now about revitalizing or creating a cultural district north of Cascades Park, it would be very helpful for them to attend Donovan Rickham's pre-conference, because that he has the roadmap. And for any doubters that cultural preservation, heritage preservation, does not contribute to economic development, he will explain how it very much contributes.
Are we talking the potential revitalization of perhaps the Smoky Hollow area? Let's hold on to that thought here. We're going to take a quick time out and then back with more about Emancipation Month and beyond right here on Perspectives. 414-1234 locally, 800-926-8809 long distance. We'll be right back. Back on Perspectives for Emancipation Month, activities going on starting this weekend with Living History. More on that to come. Altamise Barnes, Missy McGee, and Sarah Shaw here with us on Perspectives. And Richard, you hang on the line. We'll get to you in just a second. Want to follow up on what we were talking about right before the break, though, Altamise, concerning the rebirth of that whole Smoky Hollow corridor heading north out of Cascades Park along Franklin Boulevard. The conventional wisdom being, okay, the spirit houses that were right there below the Appalachian Parkway overpass, that's really neat. You got the John G. Reilly House Museum. That's an original structure. Everything else is gone. Not true.
No, definitely not. And I want us to really get involved with the director of COCA, Dr. Audrey Pittman, and also the city of Tallahassee, CRA. Missy and I went to both two meetings recently with Roxanne Manning and her group, where they are talking about developing a cultural district north of Cascades Park. And Dr. Audrey Pittman, who went with the group to Colorado, her feedback was that in Tallahassee, it has been long ago time to capitalize on the arts, heritage, and culture. And an ideal place would be in that district that Roxanne is talking about, because you have original structures, the first waterworks building, the electrical building. Of course, the electrical building is now being repurposed, which that's great. But this is all in what was the Smoky Hollow area. You have the first public health department that's sitting right next to the jail on Gaines Street. So while we have the entertainment component for the concerts and the children's discovery garden and that kind of thing, if we could just take that next step, looking at these historical structures that Donovan Rickham is going to tell us how to do this at the pre-conference, take those structures or help us know how to do it. I don't want to downplay the fact that we don't have anybody who knows how to do this. But give us some other concepts of how we can take this historical piece and connect it with the entertainment piece, park area, to become that heritage tourism draw or destination. That's economic development.
Because there was commercial development there originally. It wasn't just a residential area.
Correct.
That was a community.
Yes.
Yeah, we must talk more about that. Richard's been patiently hanging on the line. Let's get to him right now. Hi, Richard. Thanks for calling. Hello, Richard. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
I was wondering why the Emancipation Enforcement Notice was read at the Knott's house and not at the Capitol building.
What a wonderful question. Who knows the answer to that one? Sarah?
Brigadier General Edward McCook, he made the Knott House, well, what is now the Knott House, used to be the Hagner House, he made it his headquarters. And he wanted, we have the feeling that he didn't want to make a big to-do about it because he wanted Florida and the Capitol to be a bit more quiet. And not like some places when the troops came in, it was very, well, people didn't want them there. They were conquered, basically. So he wanted it to be more peaceful.
And he didn't even bring all the troops in, according to the readings. And in the announcement, the proclamation reading, when people come to hear it, General McCook actually said, I've left some of my troops, many of my troops, on the outskirts of town, wanting to make this as quiet a reading or occasion as possible, but to get the enforcement done.
So unlike some other southern capitals, there was not this huge parade of occupying troops come swooping down Monroe Street then. He just sort of came in and set up shop and read the proclamation. Any idea how many people were there for the original reading? Is there anything in history about that?
Well, it's written down of who spoke and all those kinds of things. But to actually put a number on it, as we said, there weren't that many people in Tallahassee proper. But you also had people coming here from as far away as Jacksonville, for sure. Roughly probably 400 or 500, few hundred people who came in.
It must have been a really, I don't want to say tempestuous time because we don't have anything in history about, you know, snipers on rooftops or anything else, but just the uncertainty of this having been a Confederate capital. Suddenly, the South has lost the war. There are Union troops now in downtown Tallahassee, even though it's just a handful of them. That must have been a really disconcerting time to be in this town.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that's a part of the value that Mr. Clifton Lewis is bringing to the 20th of May celebration, is understanding, although we look back at history and say, well, if President Lincoln issued this proclamation in 1863, how could it have taken 2 years to get news here? And Mr. Lewis has done an excellent job of really describing and highlighting that history. It wasn't so much that the word had not traveled, but the enforcement of any proclamation is the same today. When a law is passed, it's no stronger than its enforcement. And the significance of May 20th, 1865 to the state of Florida is that when news arrived, it arrived with enforcement. And General McCook represented enforcement. And for a lot of the African Americans who were present at the time, that's hope. That's not just me believing that this is necessary or that this is true, but I have enforcement. I have someone to defend my right to citizenship. I have someone to defend my freedom here. And that is a part of why it's a cause for celebration. It's a part of the reason why we do an Emancipation and Abolitionist Ball, is to say that this is something worthy of celebrating, that this is something that led to many other, the development of many other freedoms, that later in the year we then had the passage of the 13th Amendment. So we don't want to, you know, overlook the necessity of the enforceable right of African Americans to live henceforth and forever free. as the Emancipation says, Emancipation Proclamation says. So there's a lot of reason to come and really understand and, like we said, see history illustrated, demonstrated, lived in real time so that we understand that these things are still relevant today, that the passage of the 13th Amendment was directly tied to the Emancipation Proclamation, and it was directly tied to African Americans all of a sudden having to, at least for African American men, having to stake a claim to freedom and what that freedom would look like going forward, what the country will look like now with all of its citizens represented or having access to things like voting rights, and ownership of land. And these are, again, those foundational things that lead us to a pioneer like a John Gilmore Riley, who was then able to be educated and to become an educator, to become a local principal and a landowner and someone who made a lasting impact on our community. So a lot of that common thread is a part of the reason why we focus so much on doing things authentically and accurately, and even down to what Mrs. Barnes described, that May 20th drumbeat, that those things are significant and meaningful. Because having an understanding, like you said, of where we came from is really going to indicate where we're going.
How many folks were actually directly impacted? How many enslaved folks were, with this reading, they found out, we are free. We no longer belong to anybody.
I think the numbers for enslaved persons at that time,
over 10,000.
It was over 10,000 people here. We were a plantation town, so this was, for all intents and purposes, Florida's cotton capital.
Mm-hmm. So, Leon County had the highest number of plantations. In fact, there were over 70 plantations in Leon County alone.
And with 200,000 people in the metro population, we're talking out of one out of 20 people.
Exactly.
Today, what must that day have been like?
Amazing.
And to think we can see it again.
Right.
Now, that's you and me. How many folks, Sarah, usually show up for this? It's usually a pretty big crowd nowadays.
Yes, and it has grown bigger over the years. We expect, 800.
More.
Well, definitely this year because it's such a big year for it. Throughout most of the years, we've had between 600 to 800, depending on weather.
Yeah, there early for good parking. That's all.
Yes,
it is
definitely.
Downtown Tallahassee, after all. So.
And we have a group coming up from Palm Beach, the school.
Yeah, we actually, this year we are having people come in from out of town. We have local schools, many local schools coming in, Governor's Charter School, Rickards. From Palm Beach, we have the Renaissance Charter School. So we have several school groups coming in as well. So we can it's young students actually coming in for a field trip to learn.
God, yeah. That's great. Now there are usually some other ancillary parts of the celebration. And talk about the guy who plays General McCook.
Brian Bevo. Yes, he is a longtime volunteer. He works hard and he loves playing Brigadier General Edward Moody McCook every year for well over 10 years now. He's been playing General McCook and doing the reading every single year at our Emancipation Celebration.
Yeah, and what he invests in that reading is beyond just the dry words on paper. As we know, language was a little bit stilted back in the day, and it's really easy to do that in such a way that it sounds incomprehensible to modern ears, but he really gives it a connection to today's people. And I think he's probably memorized it. He's really good at this.
Yes, he is. He's done a good job throughout the years.
Who else do we have? I think we had Marcus Garvey one year, a reenactor of him. Who we have anyone else on the program there, sir?
We have, other than Clifton Lewis giving the keynote address, we'll have a Battle Hymn of the Republic performed by Reverend Thaddeus Davis, and Mrs. Willie Hill and Mr. James Carmichael. The whole event will actually begin with the Legacy Concert Chorale singing old spirituals, and then Reverend Henry Steele delivering an invocation. So there's a lot of things going on. Many, many things.
Okay, and that starts at what time on May 20th?
That starts at 11:30 a.m.
Okay. And as we had already indicated, coming up, Missy McGee, this Saturday, it's Living History. Give us the where's and why for's and all that stuff there, please.
Great. The Walk Through Living History will take place this Saturday in Speed Spencer Stevens Park, which is a commemorative park located right off of Saxon Street. We'll kick off with a parade at 9 o'clock a.m., and that will be headed by our 2nd Infantry Regiment, U.S. Colored Troop Reenactment Unit, and Living History Association. And they will lead us into the park, lead us down from the south side entrance of FAMU
Stadium.
FAMU Stadium, thank you, going back around to Saxon Street. And that will bring us to the park. And in the park, we will have living history throughout the day. So we'll have not only reenactment by the U.S. Colored Troops, we have the Buffalo Soldiers who are coming from Mariana. We have the Black Seminoles, which represents another part of Florida's unique history with the Bahamian community and how we came to have a free Black Seminoles. We have face painters. We have clowns for the kids. We have horseback rides for kids. We have a number of local vendors that will be out. And just a full day from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. of great activities that others can come and see all parts of Florida history reenacted or shared in song, in poetry, in theater, and in music, in ways that you don't necessarily get to see just by visiting some of the historic sites. So this is a significant day and really, again, sets the tone and the context for what life was like in the late 19th century and preparing us for what will be coming up over the next week.
Yeah, not to mention the 16th, the following Saturday, the tour guide day at the John G. Reilly House Museum from 10 until 2, and the espionage. I got to find out about that.
Yes, yes.
That brings us again full circle, Altamise. This is not the end of the line. This feels very, very much like a beginning. The layers of this onion that you have been working tirelessly to peel back for, lo, these many years, you're still finding that there's so much more to discover.
Right. And as I was sharing this morning, I just hope I should live so long as to see this cultural district north of Cascades Park. That's very exciting. We are inspired by what we're hearing from the city and from Coker and others. And I find myself, as you said in the intro, emeritus, but the mind is still turning as to what more can be done, you know, in the time that we have. And we have the younger generation, the next generation coming on. And as I said to them, the first generation took the step to save the Reilly House. And the second generation put the program in and kept it up. And so now as we transition to that third generation, there is an obligation now that you know what the first and the second of us struggled to do, and some, you know, of course, are still around to continue helping, but we feel we are passing the torch to capable hands, and we'll continue doing what we can to do the research and pass the additional information on so that they can continue creating these publications and programs to educate all people to what our history and our past has been about.
And to this higher realization of exactly how significant this area was and continues to be
exactly
in the struggle for equality and and community, right. Which we still have quite a ways to go in that regard. We saw with that recent survey that showed the huge disparity in income in this community. And I think that hit a lot of people upside the head. Oh, we're doing wonderful in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. Maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. So how do we build on this history to get us to a better future? Mm-hmm. That will be something for all of us to work on then.
Yes.
So much excitement, so many things to go. Website, where do we go for more information?
www.rileymuseum.org.
And also the www.museumofloridahistory.com/news/emancipation2015.cfm.
Yay. Sarah Shaw, Missy McGee, and, of course, Altamise Barnes, thank you all for coming in, and happy Emancipation Month.
Thank you, Tom.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls pushing the buttons and getting us connected today, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Next Thursday, the studio will be filled with local writers and musicians. Beware. All talking about what's being done to further encourage development of artistic talent in the area. We'll chat then here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.